Hello, everyone. Happy Sunday and happy Easter. Lord Blue just popped in the room. It's been a while. Hello, Lord Blue. Joe Wolf just popped in the room. It's been a while there, too. Hello, Joe Wolf. Hi, Gina. Hi, Regina. I heard myself referred to as RDA. That's good. That's good. It's good that there's not one way of referring to Regina, RDA, Gina. That's nice. Keep mixing it up. And then well. So through the seven steps to awakening, which we're going to look at tonight. Through the seven steps to awakening, one of the things that's been happening is I've been practicing inquiry, or it could also be called investigation. That's being guided by my contemplation, actually. And it's really nice because, you know, I just realized as I said that out loud that I wanted a guide for my contemplation. I wanted some kind of a guide to guide that, not the contemplation, the inquiry. I wanted some kind of a guide to guide the inquiry because I wanted the inquiry to be really, really purposeful. And it felt like a valid guide could help me to make sure my inquiry was really purposeful. And that guide in form seems to have shown up as the seven steps. And I feel like today something's been seen that wasn't seen before. You know, we could call it a shift. And I posted about it on Facebook, sort of. It was too much to actually post about. So what I did was I posted, kind of a recommendation, I guess, for anyone who was interested that they look at my journal, the RDA Seven Steps Journal from number 350 through 367, which was written today. But one of the things that has come, you know, through me and to me as I'm doing the seven steps. Obviously, step one, anybody who knows anything about the seven steps, we're in step one now here in the teaching. Step one, the primary purpose of step one is to teach us that the mind can not understand this, which Cheryl was just talking about. The mind can never do this, which is something that is said in the teachings of Inner Ramana. That really the mind is not the tool for awakening, not really. Although the minds can be used, and one thing that came through me in the seven steps is that the mind can be used for inquiry, the mind can be used for contemplation, and the mind can be used for what is being called remembrance in my journal. And those are helpful uses of mind. But the awakening itself, you know, as Jesus calls it in A Course in Miracles, is an experience. It's not a mind understanding. So one of the things that's become clear through the seven steps is that mind, you could say it has its purpose on this path, but it certainly is not the means of the answer. And so as a result, what I have been completely willing for is to what I call see, to see. To experience, to know through experience rather than through intellectual understanding. And as I mentioned, now that I'm in step two, which step two is the teaching that the world is not real, and also that the body is not real. Now that I'm in step two, there's a lot of inquiry. It's kind of funny. It's like logic. It's like the mind is being used. Logic is being used to go beyond the mind. And this morning I was on a path of inquiry. It's actually a path of inquiry that started I don't know the date, I'll estimate a week ago, you know, whenever 350 was written. Well, a few days ago at some point, what came through is what I called an assignment today. And the assignment was to be more honest than humanly honest. And to, you know, through inquiry, to begin to recognize the difference between what is absolutely known through direct experience and what is only believed, you know, or learned and adopted as true. And when that assignment came, it said, do not abandon honesty. You know, just continue with this absolute honesty until the true answer is known. And ever since that came, because remember that assignment said to be honest in determining what is absolutely known through direct experience. Those words have just been ringing in my mind. What is absolutely known through direct experience. And so the question that's kind of been in my mind, kind of in the background, has been like, but don't I know the world through direct experience? You know, am I, there's been like this, you could call it a doubt thought. There's been like this thought, am I just trading for another set of beliefs, this belief that the world is not real? Am I, you know, studying the seven steps and taking on new beliefs? And there was this knowing that I don't want to do that. I need something more than faith, intellectual understanding, brainwashing. So that thought has been there. Don't I directly experience the world? And this morning I got the answer to that thought. The answer was a very clear no, I do not directly experience the world. What directly experience the world is kind of funny because I think I actually learned this in first grade. First grade, second grade, somewhere around there, maybe third grade tops, we learn this in early science. What directly experiences the world is the five senses of the body. I mean, just look at it for a moment. We experience the world through sight, through sound, through taste, through touch. What's the other one? Which one am I leaving out? Smell. So it's not that I directly experience the world. It's that the body seems to directly experience the world. That has done something for me. I don't know if you can hear it. Again, we all learn this in first, second, or third grade somewhere. It's not new. But somehow it has shifted the world, I'm going to call it, outward, for lack of a better way of explaining it. It has shifted the world outward, further away from I. I don't know, it's hard to put into words. But what was coming through the contemplation today was also an important idea, which is leading to the next path of inquiry for me. What was coming through inquiry today and has been coming through inquiry and contemplation for the last week is, of course, there's a teaching, and remember, I'm taking all teachings with a grain of salt right now. Okay, I'm taking all teachings with a grain of salt because I am not here to trade for just another set of beliefs. But there's a teaching that's been coming through, which is, again, not new. You've heard this before. That the mind makes the body. And the logic that came through today was, if the mind makes the body, then the mind is also imagination. And the next question then is, do I directly experience the body? I mean, I saw today, not learned, I saw today that I do not directly experience the world, the body does. So the next question becomes, do I directly experience the body? And I don't have a shift type of answer for that. I could probably give an intellectual one, but I don't want to do that. But I'm very happy I'm very happy that the inquiry seems to be resulting in meaningful seeing. Well, I can hear Danielle's upstairs. She'll hear this in like 30 seconds. I can hear my voice, and it's like way later than my actual voice. It's kind of funny. Like 30 seconds. You guys are in a different universe from me. All right. So I guess that's all I wanted to say. It may not even mean anything, but sometimes it's helpful to stay on the step that you're on, if that makes any sense. So I guess I wasn't ready to move backwards yet to number 133, which is where we're starting. But I am ready now. So what we're going to do now is we're going to go backwards in the seven steps to awakening to 133. And I'm going to give you a link. By the way, if you want to later, if you want to go look on my Facebook page where I did post today about these about this journaling from number 350 to 367, just before I came in the room to listen to Cheryl, I saw a quote or a post today by John Troy, which seemed to be a perfect fit, at least for me. It seemed like he was saying the same thing. It seemed like he was saying that the purpose of inquiry is to realize what I am realizing through inquiry. You know, not learn it intellectually, but to have the true seeing, the true experience. And I don't know, I posted it right underneath, you know, as a comment, what John Troy said. So if anybody wants to go look at that, it's there. All right, tell you what, why don't we go into a bit of silence? It's funny, I can't quit thinking about the question, do I directly experience the body? It's like that. I guess that's why I talked about it. It's like that question is running like a stuck record in my mind, which is, you know, kind of what was happening before with the question, you know, don't I directly experience the world? It just kept running, it kept running, it kept running. And then this morning the answer appeared. And now this next question, do I directly experience the body, it's just running. I can't make it stop. Dove has posted part of what John Troy said today, which I posted on my Facebook page. I'll read that. It says, self-inquiry is using the mind to transcend the mind as a belief. It, meaning the mind, never was. Then both are discarded as the primacy of what we think we are. And then he goes on to say, Jesus was instructing, not bragging, when he supposedly said, be still and know I am God. We are all one in this truth, some refer to as love, no exceptions, John Troy. But what's really interesting about what John Troy wrote, at least to me, is of course when he said that the mind is being used to transcend the mind as a belief. If you happen to take the time to look at number 350 through 367, you can see that's exactly what's going on there. Yeah, and Om Vati is saying, Muji told of how you can remove one thorn from your foot with another thorn and then throw both away. And I think that originally came from Ramana Maharshi. At least that's where I know. Maybe he heard it from someone else before. I don't know. Maybe it's been around for, you know, hundreds of thousands of years in the Hindu culture. But yeah, that you take a thorn in order to, like we would in this culture, we would take a needle, right? You take a thorn to get the thorn out of your foot, and then you throw both away. Okay, Dev is now posting more of what John Troy said, so I'll continue to read. To allow the I thought to die prior to biological death removes the, oh, here's the word, thorn of death forever. Look how that worked out. That is the essence of the allegory of the virgin birth, crucifixion, and resurrection. Hear the message of the parable and let the words and images fall away. It is universal truth. When there is no other, there is no argument, and every action is perfect and unfolding exactly as it should. All right. I've given you guys the link, but I've done a lot of talking, so I'm going to give you the link again. This is the link to number 133 in my journal. What I'm going to do is I'm reading from the Seven Steps to Awakening, the book. I'm going to read quote number 133, and I'm reading from the Supreme Yoga, which I had said before, I don't know who this is, this person called the Supreme Yoga. Well, my dear friend Cheryl Valentine emailed me this week and let me know that it's not a person. It is a book, and in fact, it's probably somewhat of an ancient book. I don't know. I guess I should look more into it before I talk about it. But anyway, there is a book called The Supreme Yoga. And you can go to Amazon.com and you can find it there. So that's where these quotes come from, is a book called The Supreme Yoga. All right, so from The Supreme Yoga, in The Seven Steps to Awakening, it is numbered quote number 133. Here we go. When you realize that which is indicated by the words, then naturally you will abandon the jugglery of words. So he says again, simply, when you realize that, right? We could say when you realize that truth, right? When you realize that capital F fact, which is indicated by the words, then naturally you will abandon the jugglery of words. So let's look at the journal. If anybody's listening on the radio, to look at the journal, you go to RDA7. Again, that's the digit 7, not spelled out. RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. We're under step 1, which you'll see on the menu bar. And then you'll just find the series of numbers that will allow you to get to quote number 133. And here is what was written after contemplation. We do not discuss in this room or any place else. We do not discuss how grass feels when we touch it. We've never had that discussion, have we? We do not discuss how grass feels when we touch it. Why? Because the feel of grass is naturally noticed. That which is naturally noticed does not require discussion. Well, that sounds like a bunch of people upstairs, but I guess it's not. It must just be Jasmine and Danielle. I think they're decorating eggs. Sounds like a party. You know, I think we've probably all seen somewhere ideas like, you know, those who talk about it do not know. And, you know, these words that came through me as I contemplated this Supreme Yoga quote kind of explains why that would be. Just like we don't talk about, we don't sit around and have discussions, we don't have study groups, we don't do anything to discuss how grass feels. Because we all just sit in the grass and we feel it with our fingers or we feel it with our toes and we know how it feels and we know that everyone else knows how it feels and it does not require discussion. So as the Supreme Yoga said, when you realize that which is indicated by the words, then naturally you will abandon the jugglery of words, right? No more need for discussion of anything that is naturally noticed. Okay, if you are in the journal with me and you want to go to the next writing, you just scroll down. Just above the dark gray area on the left, you'll see a little number 134. You can just click on that, and that will take you to the next one. And what I am going to do is paste a link in the room for anyone who's not in the journal. And first, I'm going to read number 134 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, page 36. Again, the original source of the quote is another book called The Supreme Yoga. Give up notions, thoughts, and intentions. When they cease, the mind naturally turns to what is truly beyond the mind, the infinite consciousness. Give up notions, thoughts, and intentions. When they cease, the mind naturally turns to what is truly beyond the mind, the infinite consciousness. So if we look at the journal, if I do not think about what I see, and I do not think about what I hear or feel, if I let thinking cease entirely and watch, listen, feel what is experienced. Can it be named? This is just a question. It's just a question that is meant to lead into the curiosity, and from the curiosity into the willingness, and then into the natural receipt of grace. It's a question that is meant to lead to a ceasing of the thinking mind through curiosity and then willingness and then grace. You know, the average person, the average bear, doesn't think about or question the thinking. You know, like, I see two people doing something and my mind automatically interprets what I think I see. And the average person does not ever question that interpretation. The average person just believes whatever the mind says you just saw. You know, if I think I see one person angry at another person, and I think I saw that the anger was there because of this, and da-da-da, you know, a little story automatically gets made up, and then I just believe that. And I might walk away and tell someone later, yeah, well, I saw so-and-so talking to so-and-so, and he appeared mad because of blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I just see that as a fact. But what if I don't think about what I see? Or I don't think about what I hear, or even what I feel? You know, we can come up with great stories about our emotions. We can come up with a story about why I have a headache, why I feel melancholy today. We can even come up with a story about why I'm cold. You know, if I do not think about what I see and I do not think about what I hear or feel, if I let thinking cease entirely and just watch, listen, feel, just let it be, then what is experienced? Can it be named? Again, this is just a question. It's a question meant to lead to, hopefully, an intense curiosity, an intense willingness, and an opening to grace and discovery, realization, experience. All right, so if you are in the journal now, you can just scroll down above the dark gray area to the left, click on number 135. I will post a link in the room because people have definitely come into the room. This is a link to number 135. Before I read from this link, however, I will read quote number 135 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, which is actually quoting another book called The Supreme Yoga. Here it is. Ideation multiplies naturally by itself. I don't think anything truer has ever been said. You know, ideation or thinking multiplies naturally by itself, and this leads to sorrow, not happiness. So if you start thinking about, you know, the two people that you saw where one appeared angry at the other one, and you and your mind is creating a story about that, and you start listening to that story is going to multiply and get bigger by itself. That's what this is saying. Ideation multiplies naturally by itself. And then the effect of that, this leads to sorrow, not to happiness. All right, let's look at the journal. A story begins with one idea. A worry begins with one thought, and a fear begins with one belief. Wouldn't it be nice if we knew when to stop? Which would be as soon as that first thought appeared. Because if we let that first thought continue to blossom, you know, it can really grow and grow and grow. Every story begins with one idea. Every worry begins with just one thought. And every fear begins with just one belief. And I guess the question is, logically, when is it easier to step away? Is it easier to step away when it's one idea, one thought, or one belief? Or is it easier to step away after it's blossomed into a big story with attachments, emotional effects in the body? If we could learn when that first thought appears that is trying to be born into a story, if we could learn to let it go then we would not have to suffer the effects of sorrow. We could stay in the natural presence of happiness. Although I don't usually listen to my own teachings, I am listening to the Seven Steps teachings because for me that's a part of the practice. Because remember, the practice is to read these quotes over and over again, hundreds of times, and listening to the teachings is just one of the ways that I'm doing that. So I heard myself telling a story the other day about how, again, Delta Airlines changed our flight, the flight that is, it's a part of our return from Israel. And I talked about two different stories, two different thoughts that appeared in my mind in relation to that, which I won't go into those details now, they're not important. But what I said in both cases was, when I saw that thought, you know, I just let that go. And then I want to say, but let's pretend for a moment I had listened to that thought. Here's how the story could have grown. But see, for me, the story didn't grow because I saw the initial thought. I saw the lead into the story, or the lead into the worry, or the lead into the fear. And I chose to let it go there. A story begins with one idea, a worry with one thought, and a fear with one belief. Or as Len has written, pluck the blossom and the fruit will never grow. All right, let's scroll down then. We're going to go to number 136. So you can scroll down and click on that. I will also post the link in the room. And I'm going to the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. And I am reading number 136 from The Supreme Yoga. And it says, it's a great follow-on to the discussion we just had. It says, do not entertain ideas. Very, very brief and very to the point. Do not entertain ideas. So let's go to the journal number 136. I can be without being in the head with thought. There is another way of being present now. This is what I would call a statement of willingness. This is a statement of recognition that there's still a lot of time spent in the head with thought. But it's the recognition that it doesn't have to be that way. And I am willing for it not to be that way. It's saying, I can be. I can be without being in the head with thought. There is another way of being present now. Another way meaning other than being in the head. And again, we just saw a practice that we can take part in if we want to that will help us open up to this other way of being. And that is stopping the story at the first or the second or the third thought as early as possible. Because what, of course, is keeping us in our head is not stopping the story, staying with the story, fully entertaining those ideas, fully being engaged by those ideas, even unknowingly seeing those ideas as our entertainment, right? And although I'm not always successful by any stretch of the imagination, at the same time, I do not really see this as hard. It's just a matter of kind of being on our toes, being aware of our willingness, keeping our purpose up front all of the time, wanting awakening more than we want to listen to those stories. The more that we're aware of our purpose, the faster we'll recognize a story starting and realize we don't want the story. And by the way, just to try and clarify, because I did mention the other day, at least in Facebook, that, you know, sometimes I will speak and I really feel, you know, based on my understanding of the words that I'm speaking clearly, but I talk to people and I realize that often what's heard is different than what's said. And so what I just talked about is one example repeatedly has been heard wrong. So let me try and be more clear about this. When I say stop the story, I'm talking about out of realization, out of love, out of desire to awaken. I'm not talking about out of guilt or out of fear. And sometimes when it's heard, stop the story, based on what other people have told me, what happens for them is that the story starts to run, and then the next thought is, oh no, I'm bad. I'm not supposed to be listening to a story. And then out of that thought, they try and force the story to stop. That's not the motive. That's just ego, and you can't let go of ego by using ego. We talked about using one thorn to take another thorn out of your foot, but then we were talking about mind, and A Course in Miracles kind of talks about two sides of mind, we could say. One side of mind it calls the ego. The other side of mind it calls the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit is the useful part of mind. I don't know how else to say it. It's like the It's like the right motive of mind. In fact, the Course often calls it the right mind. The right motive of mind. So when we practice, it's important to be, in the language of A Course in Miracles, practicing with the Holy Spirit. Because then some people imagine the Holy Spirit as some kind of a character they can't reach. It might be more important to say that it's recognizing the right purpose for the practice. And for some people, it may take a bit of time to look at, here's a story running in my mind. Do I want this story? Do I want to let go of this story? Why do I want to let go of this story? And through maybe through an inquiry or through a questioning, they can get to that right purpose and let it go through right purpose. But the right purpose for letting go of mind is because of an inner realization that I don't want this story, I want awakening more. You know, just like you would, you know, if your hands were full of rocks, you have a bunch of rocks in your hand, and somebody says, hey, would you like to have this chocolate cake? And you say, yeah, I'd rather have the chocolate cake. So you put down the rocks and you take the chocolate cake, right? You see something you want more. That's the motive. You let it go because you want awakening more than the story, not because you're bad for listening to a story. All right, maybe that helped. Maybe not, I don't know. But yeah, chocolate cake over rocks, absolutely. All right, let's scroll down and click on 137, which is on the left. And again, if you're not yet in the journal, I will give you a link to number 137. And I'm going to read from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, quote number 137. There is no cause for fear in the destruction of all ideation. When there is no thought, notion, or ideation ceases. I'll read that one more time and then we'll go to the journal. There is no cause for fear in the destruction of all ideation. When there is no thought, notion, or ideation ceases. Some people have told me, you know, Regina, I read these quotes and I don't understand them at all until I go and I read your journal. So apparently I'm a little simpler in the way I speak, at least sometimes. So let's see what happens here. Number 137. This is it. This is the simple translation of that sentence. There cannot be fear without thought. So what is this idea about fearing no thought? Okay, now this is something that maybe you can look at in your own mind. Let's take a fear of snakes, for example. Can you have a fear of snakes if there is no thought? Doesn't there have to be kind of a thought about what a snake is? About why a snake may be fearful? Maybe about how a snake can hurt you, the body, the thought that you are the body? Doesn't there have to be a lot of thought there in order for the fear to be there? A fear of grizzly bears. I saw a t-shirt when I was on vacation. You know, it said that there are more and more bears, you know, that the hikers are seeing. And so hikers are really encouraged to carry the pepper spray for bears and to wear the little bells that ring so that bears will hear you coming and hopefully run away, because there's just more and more bears. And then it said, you will recognize black bear poop by the berries in it. And you will recognize grizzly bear poop by the little silver bells and the smell of pepper spray. Because, of course, the grizzlies eat the hikers. But again, without all of these thoughts, can you be afraid? You know, I know people who are afraid of their natural environment where they live because they are aware of the dangers in their natural environment. But if you take them to another environment and don't tell them anything about that environment, They will hike freely and joyously. Doesn't mean there's not anything there to fear. It just means they don't have a thought about it. So, you know, there's this idea. In fact, I don't really hear it a lot anymore, but when I was first born into the Course community, I used to hear people saying a lot, we're afraid to awaken. We're afraid to awaken. We're not awakening because we're afraid to awaken. And one day I saw somebody typing that on a Yahoo group, and it kind of hit me like a ton of bricks. The only reason that we're afraid to awaken is because we keep telling ourselves we're afraid to awaken. It's that thought. It's that thought. What if we quit telling ourselves that we're afraid? Well, that's really what is happening here. Let me go back to the Supreme Yoga says, there is no cause for fear in the destruction of all ideation, which is to me just a fancy word for thinking or thought. There is no cause for fear in the destruction of all ideation. When there is no thought, notion or ideation ceases. I mean, you can't even have the thought of fear. And so you see in my journal, it was, there cannot be fear without thought. So what is this idea about fearing no thought? Do you see? It's just an idea. All fear is actually just an idea, a thought, believed. That's why people can hike more easily in an area where they are not aware of the, quote, dangers. And they may be afraid to hike in an area where they are aware. The only difference is the thought. All right, let's scroll down. And number 138, click on that. And I will post the link in the room as well. Okay. So, I'm going to read number 138 then. This is from the Seven Steps to Awakening. When thus all notions cease, there is great peace, and sorrow is destroyed to its very root. Again, when thus all notions cease, there is great peace, and sorrow is destroyed to its very root. All right, if we look at the journal, it says, oh, I love this one. Some of these have just stuck with me, and this is one of them. Thought is required for unhappiness. Happiness, however, has no prerequisite. I mentioned at the beginning of the teaching when I was kind of babbling about my own shift or realization today, I mentioned that a part of that realization, a part of the realizations that are occurring and going to occur, is the realization that I do not want to take on new beliefs. I do not want to believe that the world is not real. I do not want to believe that I am not the body. I do not want to believe that I am not the mind. In fact, that just feels like crap to me. I don't want beliefs. That just feels like trading one lie for another lie. What I need, what I require, is my own direct experience. And I am willing to give my trust, to follow a path that my heart guides me on, that is, I trust, leading me to that direct experience. But it's the direct experience that I am after, and I refuse to settle for less. So a part of what I love is anything that I can test for myself. I don't have to believe it. I can see that it is true. And this is something that we can test for ourselves. It says, thought is required for unhappiness. Well, how do you test that? Anytime you feel unhappy in any way, stop and look. Is there a thought or a story there? Sometimes I will tell you, the thought or the story is as simple as it shouldn't be this way. But there's something there. And, you know, noticing this can actually lead to a direct realization. It can lead to a direct realization, not an intellectual learning, a direct realization that thought is the cause of all suffering. So it's worthwhile to investigate even this one premise. Thought is required for unhappiness. Happiness, however, has no prerequisite. Can you be happy for no reason? Now, you might not be aware of that yet if you have too much thought going on causing the unhappiness. So you may have to focus on the first half of this first. But once you come to the realization that thought is the cause of all suffering and you start practicing letting go of thoughts, especially that first thought before the story or the worry or the fear even gets going, then what you start to discover, and I know this from my own experience, is that you are happy for no reason. In fact, I went through a phase, I don't seem to do it so much anymore, but I went through a phase where I was just so happy. And again, it was a contrast compared to what I experienced before, that every now and then I would just have to say out loud, I'm happy. I just had to express it. And often people would ask, why? Why are you happy? And there was no reason. The happiness just was. You see, happiness doesn't require a thought or a reason, but unhappiness does. Thought is required for unhappiness. Happiness, however, has no prerequisite. Happiness is, yes, the natural state. Happiness is the natural state. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 139. I don't think anyone new has popped into the room, but since I'm not super certain, I will go ahead and paste this in the room again. And I will read from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, number 139. Remove all thought. Do not waste your life and effort in other endeavors. There's only one thing to do here, and that's focus on learning not to listen to your thoughts, right? One function, the Course calls it. The Course calls it forgiveness, actually. But it says that it's your only function. How old am I? 51 years old, going on 52 this August 2nd. Remove all thought. Do not waste your life and effort in other endeavors. Reggie is 24, and he loves us. All right, let's go to number 139 in the journal. There can be a constant focus. There can be. Remember I said earlier that there is another way to be, right? I forget the exact words, but there was a can in that also. Like, I can be, I think is what it said. I can be without being in the mind with thought. Well, here it says, there can be a constant focus of letting go of thinking. These, for me, are statements of willingness. It doesn't have to be the way it sometimes is now, or it doesn't have to be the way it always is now. There is another way, right? There can be a constant focus of letting go of thinking. This watching awareness can always be present. No activity needs to distract from it. Now, of course, when I write a statement like this, it does mean that I have not yet mastered this. There's no reason to give willingness for something that you have mastered. There are times when I'm going to call it natural. There are times when I naturally, easily let go of a story that's trying to build, like with the Delta Airline flights that I mentioned earlier. There were a couple thoughts about worries, and then I just let them go, and they never manifested into stories or emotions. Sometimes stories do get, I get hooked, and they'll manifest to a certain point, and then I'll see them, and then I use that practice of rest, accept, and trust to let them go. The more you let yourself get hooked, the harder it is, at least in my experience, to let it go, because some manifesting of some form, at least an emotional involvement, has happened. But whether we're able to let go immediately, or whether we're letting the story run a little bit and then practicing letting go can be our primary focus. It can always be happening. It doesn't matter. The fact that I'm at work, that doesn't matter. I can do it at work. I can do it in the shower. I can do it while cooking dinner. I can do it while four-wheeling in Moab, Utah. Right? There can be a constant focus of letting go of thinking. And my heart, sometimes my heart just opens. You know, I almost wish you guys could feel it as I'm speaking, because you know from the feeling of my heart when I'm speaking about something that I really want to master. Like my love wants to master this. My love, my heart wants there to never be a distraction from the practice of letting go of thinking. And obviously sometimes I do still some forget. Sometimes I'm, you know, you could say quite good at it, but sometimes not as much. I get distracted, believe the story for a while. So my heart wants this to be mastered. I want this to be mastered. It's love. It's love. It's not a sense of guilt. It's not a sense of I'm not good enough. It's not a sense of I never practice well enough. This is how I'm sometimes misunderstood when I speak, is that I'm heard through a filter of I'm not good enough. This desire to have this constant focus has nothing to do with that. It's just love. It's wanting chocolate cake instead of rocks. It's that simple. Maybe with a little peanut butter sauce on top. It's that simple. It's love. It's seeing something I want more and really wanting it. It's a heart-opening desire. There can be a constant focus of letting go of thinking. This watching awareness can always be present. No activity needs to distract from it. I don't ever have to forget. And I don't want to. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 140. And I really don't think there's been any change in the room in a bit of time, so I'm just going to trust that you all can find 140 on your own. And I'm going to go back to the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, and read the next quote. Again, all of these quotes, the original source is another book called The Supreme Yoga. Number 140. Bondage is bondage to thoughts and notions. Freedom is freedom from them. Again, bondage is bondage to thoughts and notions. Freedom is freedom from them. So number 140 in the journal says, search the mind for every idea of unhappiness. With each one, ask, what would be my experience without this idea? This reminds me very much of one of Byron Katie's questions in her work, right? What would be my experience with this idea? Now, by the way, this is another place where I am sometimes misunderstood. I don't mind making these clarifications. When this says search the mind for every idea of unhappiness, for me, this does not mean to sit here at my desk and rack my brain to try and think of every idea of unhappiness. This means to be open all of the time, or as much as possible, to seeing ideas of unhappiness when they appear. So I don't actually, even though it says search the mind, the way that I hear that is more of it's like you're running a scan in the background. Does that make sense? You're running a scan in the background, and you're saying, okay, I want to see when an idea of unhappiness shows up, I want this virus scanner to catch it. So I'm running a scan in the background all the time. I'm not sitting here at my desk racking my brain. I go into the kitchen and, you know, somebody has spilled Kool-Aid on the counter and not cleaned it up, and there's the appearance of a stain setting in. And a thought of unhappiness shows up. Like, oh no, it's going to stain. It's going to look awful always. I'm never going to get that red out. And then the background scan catches it. And the background scan says, here's an idea of unhappiness. And I say, okay, so what would be my experience without this idea? If I didn't have this thought that this red is always going to be here, that somehow this red is bad, that this red is ruining the appearance of my kitchen, if these thoughts simply did not exist, what would be my experience? And if you really look at that, there comes a realization that there is a red stain on the counter, the only way that red stain can bother me is if I hold on to that thought that it's not supposed to be there. If I hold on to that thought that, a red stain is bad. If those thoughts did not exist, there could not be unhappiness. What would be my experience without this idea? I'd be fine. That's the answer. But again, I'm not asking anyone to take on new beliefs. I feel like Laurence, I used to hear Laurence saying this all the time when he would teach. He would say, I'm asking you to investigate, find out for yourself. So maybe he just hit this point a little before I did, because now that's what I want to say. I'm not asking you to take on new beliefs. I'm not asking you to intellectually adopt the idea that I can only be unhappy if I have thoughts. I'm asking you to investigate. Find out for yourself. See for yourself that this is true. See for yourself that the stain on the carpet only upsets you because of the thoughts in your mind every time the eyes land on the stain in the carpet. This is why some people can have stains in their carpet and be perfectly happy. It's not because they're pigs. It's because they don't have thoughts that stains are bad, that stains shouldn't be there. The stains are not a problem for them. So, search the mind. Again, a background virus scan, not an analytical, painful searching your mind, trying to think of all of these ideas, with a background virus scan that's running all of the time, right? Search the mind for every idea of unhappiness. Be willing to see them. Be willing to let something in your mind tell you, oops, there's an idea of happiness. Be willing for something in your mind to highlight it for you so that you notice it. And of course, in miracles, we call that something the Holy Spirit. But that's just Course in Miracles language. Even if you had never heard of the Holy Spirit, even if you could not have an idea of the Holy Spirit, there is still something in your mind that will highlight these things for you. We don't have to give it a name. Call from Run. Hopefully Danielle and Jasmine will answer the phone. We'll see. So let that something highlight for you these ideas of unhappiness, and then say, okay, what would be my experience without this idea? That's it. That's tonight. So tomorrow I will begin with number 141 and continue forward. I'm here at 2:00 Eastern time. And I look forward to it. I love going over the 7 steps. Whether I'm going over them reading, going over them teaching, going over them listening to teaching, it doesn't matter. I love going over the seven steps. So thanks for letting me do this, and I'll see you all tomorrow. Bye.